Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. Please check us out at liveparanormal.com, hauntedplayground.com, and on all of Live Paranormal's international affiliates, iHeartRadio.com, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Player FM, Blog Talk Radio. The list goes on and on. We're happy to be here every Wednesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host. And I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I also do another great show, Raising the Vibration, on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. And, of course, this one every Wednesday at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. Every week on the show, I gather the brightest and most beautiful minds in the paranormal and spiritual communities. And we talk about everything from the afterlife to maybe you think there's a Loch Ness Monster in your swimming pool. It all belongs right here on Haunted Playground. My guest today is no stranger to any of my shows and a very dear friend. He's a wonderfully talented filmmaker, writer, producer, director, musician, author. And he's here to talk about something brand new and wonderful that he has, as he always has something brand new and wonderful whenever he comes to the show. Please welcome to Haunted Playground my very dear friend, Christopher St. Booth. How are you, my friend? It's so wonderful to have you here and so fantastic to get you back on the show.
Hello, 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 L.A. I'm fabulous.
Do you miss us, Christopher? You were here for quite a long time, weren't you?
I was 30 years, and then I went searching across the Midwest and the South and everywhere else as haunted places in America, and I never found a way back to L.A. as of yet. So,
We miss you. But where you are now, you're kind of right where the Midwest meets the South, right?
I'm not good at this. I don't know where I am, actually. I think so, in between Nashville and Kentucky and in Ohio, in between Ohio and six places you can get out if you needed to. But it's a good hub, not only to do paranormal, but to make movies, because you're like a hop, skip and a jump away from anything that's really cool in the, this area.
Right.
So it's, it worked out
really
well.
I don't know if we've talked about this. I'm sure we have, but my mom was born in Louisville, so my family's from there. And my mom's family, her original family, she was an orphaned and then adopted with the people I knew as my grandparents in upstate New York, but she's from Louisville and lived there till she was 12. She used to always call it the gateway to the South. And it's interesting because when you're in Louisville and you're looking at the Ohio River, there's like three freeways, right? And one says St. Louis, one says Ohio, and one says Indiana. And it's interesting that it's a very interesting spiritual place, I think, because it has the river and it also has those gateways to everything else. And I think sometimes we don't look at where we live, the spirituality of it, but sometimes it's kind of fun to do so, right?
Well, indeed. I mean, the architecture and the locations out here just alone are just magnificent. Where we filmed our last film was in an old convent in Ohio, and it was like a turn-of-the-century old nunnery, and it was just so crazily haunted, but it was absolutely beautifully still gorgeous inside with the 30-foot ceilings and the mile walkways, hallways, and you could actually feel the energy of the nuns walking down there. So, I mean, you don't get places like that, except unless you come out here, unless you go overseas,
Yeah, very true. Very, very true, right? Yeah, that's Why do you think it is that particularly convents, right, seems like even more than monasteries, or there is something about a convent that they always seem to be so haunted?
I don't know. This, you know, I mean, I know that when we were filming The Attached that we had seen, you know, what seemed like nuns, you know, going up the stairs, and there was all kind of oppression to the film set, and, you know, issues that were happening that shouldn't be happening. And it was all due to the fact that they were very, as I understood, they were very stern and very, a lot of them were depressed, and a few of them, you know, had killed themselves, and some other things like that had happened. So it was just a lot of, I guess, mental health issues as well going on those places. Being the turn of the century, people maybe not even, you're not realizing what they're doing and being there, I'm not sure, but it definitely carries an incredible intense energy. It's funny because going through the different locations that we filmed at, I have to say that they are some of the scariest and some of the most oppressed places, obviously next to Waverhill Sanatorium, which is, you know, tuberculosis sanatorium. So there's something due to mental health or some kind of an energy that is put out there. Maybe it's a guilt why some of them become nuns. I don't know. But I didn't like filming there, I have to tell you. I didn't like it.
Yeah. I think that there's something about illness, which is why I think mental hospitals are so hard, or hospitals, or like you said, Waverly, which is a tuberculosis hospital. I think when people are mentally or physically deficient in some way, it makes them almost more of a sort of a easier for the paranormal to touch them, right? I was going to say victims of the paranormal, but I didn't like how that sounded. But I think that's kind of true,
yeah.
Right? That when there is that kind of deficiency in someone, which is why I think even in people's homes, right, the people with mental and physical illnesses tend to be the ones that get hit pretty hard with hauntings and attachments and possessions and all of that stuff, right?
It's a catch-22, you know, in the cases of even like Annalise Mitchell and other ones. Is she, you know, is she mentally ill? Is she unhealthy with, you know, all kinds of, you know, fits and forms of other mental and health issues? Or is because her immune system is down, she's easy to take over by these energies and spirits? So it's a catch-22 when you're doing an investigation or even a, you know, sort of a report on her. Is she, you know, are these people ill? Do they do drugs? Do they do alcohol? Are they doing something that's completely, that's, you know, hallucinogenic, or are they actually in that state and actually are welcoming the, you know, the bad energy to them? So it's kind of an interesting concept when you study that stuff, you know, and you investigate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I even think those of us that are, you know, I'm a psychic, you are extremely sensitive, intuitive person. We sometimes, right, are more open to attacks, attachments, possessions, contact. People always say, how do you contact the dead? And I'm like, I don't really have a choice. They come and find me. So I think that, you know, anybody who is in some way, you know, open or sensitive or vulnerable can be more contacted more readily by spirits.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, women, sort of a lot of sensitive men, musicians, painters, actors, anybody that uses their, you know, their energy craft with more emotion. Obviously, women being more, you know, emotional than, you know, the hard men, so to speak. But anybody that has a lot more sensitivity is more open to feel a paranormal energy and experience. And that's why artists, I mean, a creator talks with emotion through their craft. So they're going to be very sensitive. I mean, you get up, you get your hair pulled pretty quickly, you know, because you communicate through art. And if you're going to do that, there's a good chance that, you know, you're going to be open to seeing more energy of spirits. And that's what
Absolutely.
I found anyway.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Tell me about your new project, because I'm so excited for you. I love that you truly, Christopher, are really a Renaissance man. I mean, you just, and I think that you function like I do, which is just that, you know, people always say, how do you do so many things? And I always say, well, you know, Spirit just tells me this is the next thing you're doing. And I just say, okay. And I kind of have always had that same feeling about you, that you're just sort of moved to do whatever it is you're asked to do, and you just keep saying yes.
Yeah, that, and I believe that, you know, as long as I'm creating, I'm alive. I mean, for me, as an artist, which I've always been since, you know, the wee young. I mean, I was in a very successful rock band when I turned 18, and I was a rock and roller even at 14 on the road. So I've always been an artist. I've always been, you know, a filmmaker, musician, creator, whatever. So I have to create or I don't feel like I'm alive. So it's natural for me, but I also feel the right moments to put something out or do something, or something talks to me to do it. And the thing that we're doing right, that came out right now, is my new book, and it's called My Haunted Attachment. And it's basically about things that you really don't realize that you could bring home, that could create some form of energy, even a good one, but even havoc in your home. And, you know, it's like going to a thrift store, an antique store, picking something up on the side of the road, or bringing something home from a haunted building that you should never do, anything like that. And then suddenly something changes in your life, your personality, your health, whatever it may be, something starts taking over, or something is visiting you now. Excuse me. And then what we did is, with that kind of a off of our movie, The Attached, I went ahead and had written the book on what, you know, also had happened while we were doing that movie with these haunted attachments that we brought at home, whether it was an exorcism box of Annalise Mikkel or John Wayne Gacy's painting stored in somebody's closet, or all that kind of stuff that's in The Attached. But this book goes in depth into exactly what could happen and what does happen. And it also actually has a guest appearance by Barry Taft, who talks a lot as we communicate on the concept of the entity, the real movie. Mm. So we talk about a lot of different things in this. And also, you know, Reverend Archbishop Christine Rake, she talks a lot about religious side of it. Yeah, she's fabulous. So we all kind of put our heads together and put this My Haunted Attachment book out, which actually includes an incredible amount of photographs of incredible evidence that we had caught. So it's a really good, solid book on the subject of, you know, what you may bring home might change your life or hurt you. And it's eye-opening.
Right. And be careful, right? Be careful of what you get involved with. Is that a good way to say it? I was going to say
what you bring home, yes. In the olden days, if you're in Los Angeles, be careful who you bring home. This is what you bring home.
Yeah.
The old rock and roll days there. But it's what you bring home, and that could happen to anything. I mean, I've brought some crazy, my whole house is full of different antiques and different artifacts. Viking is, which I'm very into, Viking. I have 900 AD spears and clothing, and Roman, 300 AD Roman spears. And you can feel the energy. And I mean, you hold the Viking buttons, the buttons off their clothes from 300 to 600 AD in your hands, and you can feel the energy of the vibration of those warriors, those incredible warriors that needed to survive. And I'm just really into that. And I use that in my, I think my meditation practices, in the sense of you know, you feel that energy from way back and you're bringing it back today to kind of give you that energy boost. So, you know, I'm just realizing how important it is to surround you with something that has a very good outcome or a very positive energy, and then, it, you know, stay away from things that don't.
Yes, absolutely. So true. it's interesting. This is kind of a completely off-topic thing, but have you ever seen, because you collect that stuff, I'm Irish American, so I come from the same, you know, gene pool as you do way back when. Have you ever seen the first Celtic art depictions of cats? I'm very connected to cats, and I know that makes me sound like the crazy cat lady, but it's really very much on a spiritual level with me, my connection with cats. And once somebody sent me an Celtic drawing of, because obviously when the Romans came to the UK, right, they brought cats with them. And there had never really been cats there before. So it is actually like, it's Celtic art. It's a circle with Celtic knotting all around it. And in the middle, it's one of the first Celtic descriptions of a cat. And I thought about that when you were talking about the collecting the Roman stuff and the Viking, the Nordic stuff, because obviously those are two of the biggest influences that kind of came in and changed the British Isles. So it's interesting to me that you're interested in that.
Well, it's very much so. I mean, I got quite a few tattoos after becoming very interested in the Viking way, realizing that the British became Vikings, where the King of England actually became a Viking, which maybe a lot of people don't realize, and some people do, but they became Viking Catholics, and Vikings became Catholics, and I carry, you know, kind of like a lot of different Orthodox crucifixes that are half Viking, half Catholic. And they're, you know, they're hand hammered. They're beautiful. And I also got a lot of Celtic knots, you know, witches, pagans, and different type stuff that I'm very fascinated with. But I'm finding the energy is I guess it's, I'm more of a into Buddhism. And, you know, of course, I do believe forms of Christianity to a certain point until man kind of wrote that book. But, you know,
right.
I'm very much I'm very much into just anything that's good, but I'm feeling the energy. I've always felt the energy of Buddha. The story of Buddha is truly beautiful. Just, I don't know if you know the concept of Buddha in the story, but basically he was a hermit until he was able to get out. And then he saw the poverty and the sick in the world, and he just couldn't live with that anymore. So he needed to get out and try and change. And I think that's a really beautiful concept of how he became what he was, you know, and it's a self-help lesson, you know, God being I am, we are kind of God in our own right. So we are self-helping in, you know, instead of turning every time there's a problem. There's nothing wrong with the praying and the believing. I believe in all that, but I think self-help is a very important issue. So I think the pagan and the all that Norse way, Celtic, is just absolutely beautiful. And then, of course, collecting all that and also dealing with, again, writing a lot of about in my book, an energy can go either way. So, you know, you should be very thorough before you, I mean, you imagine going to we used to remember down in, I forgot, it was an American vintage store, what it was called down on Melrose, I forgot the name, was an American Yankee Doodle or whatever it was. You'd go down and buy those on Melrose, those really funky clothes, right? And you'd go take them home, and they were from the 50s and the 60s, and you could even get a 40s suit. Right, and I loved it, but imagine if somebody was not a very, very, you know, good person, and he did something terrible, and that energy just lasted, and that whole vibe was just in that suit. And he, you know, he wore his oppression, he wore his depression, he wore his narcissism, and then you're wearing that suit, and you're sensitive, and you're picking a vibe up now that you're wearing, and your whole attitude is changing. You know, and this is the stuff that we've been studying and realizing that this is, you know, very, very true in what's going on in a big realm of mood changes.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Was that store was American Rag, wasn't it?
Yeah, American Rag. There you go. I knew that I was going to get it until you.
Oh,
I was going to say a bunch of words to you.
Oh, my God. We used to go up there because I grew up in Huntington Beach, about an hour south of L.A., and we used to go up there in high school and get buy suits for, like, productions and theater because they needed all these suits for the guys when we did Agatha Christie and different things from different eras. So I love that place.
Exactly. I loved it, too. It was great.
Well, I think it's very important, and I know, you know, this is right now everyone's a hoarder, right? If you own anything, you're a hoarder, which I think is ridiculous. But I see my neighbors throwing out, like, all this stuff, like antiques and, you know, a brand-new television they used once, and I think I hope we're preserving our history because people used to preserve their history. You know, you would pass your heirlooms down from generation to generation and you'd have a Viking sword that had been in the family for 1,500 years or, you know, people used to cherish history. And I hope we're still doing that because I worry now that everything's about, this year's iPhone came out. I got to throw out last year's. And we forget how important it is to have historical things.
Well, you know, that year's iPhone, and this might be a vintage collector's item at some point way in the future. Someone will find it and go like, look, an old Apple phone. You know?
Exactly.
Because that's how they, and that's probably like, I imagine the Apple 6 is now a vintage, or the Apple 11 is, the iPhone 11 is a vintage compared now to the 13 Pro
exactly.
That's coming out. But I don't know. I love the energy behind the powerful stuff. I do realize that you can't keep everything because, I mean, you know, you literally will need a house just to keep all that stuff because, you know, this house that we're in is three floors and one of them is the Haunted Bazaar, which carries all and, you know, stores all that crazy stuff, you know. And then, of course, there's, you know, everything that you don't want to. I do wear, I love vintage hats and I love vintage clothing too, so I try to go by feeling a vibe when I put a hat on and saying, oh, this makes me feel great. I'm going to go and walk in with this one. And there are some ones that you just, you know, you feel bad energy from, you know, and you just got to stay away from that. And there's just some really horrific issues about people bringing something home and their whole life has changed. You know,
absolutely.
Basically,
absolutely.
In St. Albans Sanatorium, I think you got a copy of our film, The Attached, if you remember
it.
The scene
sure.
With Rebecca at the end there in the hospital, in the asylum where she lost her baby. I actually had probably one of the main times I felt like something, you know, usually you have a ghost that walks through you. And when it walks through you, it feels almost like if you're in ecstasy or something, you tingle and you're high and you're light and you're happy. It walks
yeah.
right through
mm-hmm.
you. You feel this jolly energy. And then there's this one time that something just doesn't, it goes through you, but it stops. It like it hangs on you. And then it's a feeling of dread and like a dark shadow comes over you. And that's what happened to me in St. Albans Sanatorium. And then, you know, I just felt like there was a lot of oppression and grief that I had to go through until I finally got rid of it, you know. And I think that's what you have to be really careful about, bringing something home, even in, you know, the form of an entity or some kind of a hitchhiker, when you go to something that has a tragic event. And it doesn't have to be a haunted place. It could be somewhere where somebody, they didn't have to die. I mean, it could be someone that is truly going through physical or mental abuse that was in a room for a very long time. You move into a house, like my studio used to be a room where a boy that had Down syndrome was locked in and he was somewhat mentally challenged and they locked him from the other, they locked his door. So he locked him up in here terribly. And his
wow.
energy, I can feel it in here. And so I moved my studio in here because I felt that he was in here trying, he was creating, he was imagining. So I could not think of better inspiration from a boy that needed, that was locked up, that could have imagination going through his mind to entertain him himself, would be inspiring in what I write and create here. You see, so that's kind of where my head is at. I'm not afraid of it. You know, just sometimes it's weirded me out. Yeah, I think when I saw the thing in the basement when I had a certain object, it kind of freaked me out. But, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to get rid of that one. You know, we're going to get rid of that. We had gotten
right.
a lot of bottles from Waverly Sanatorium, and one of them seemed to have a really bad end. They were actually IV bottles that were dug up in the forest. and they were from the 1920s of Waverly Sanatorium. And I had quite a few of them, but there was one that just when you looked at it, it would just look, it wasn't black, but it looked like it was black when you looked at it, and had a bad energy. And there was just times that you saw like a shadow figure just walking around you out of the corner of your eye. And it was a very uneasy feeling. So that we got rid of that. I didn't want to have that
right.
around.
Yeah, that's,
you know.
Yeah, I understand. That's very smart. Where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, the book actually just came off of the concept of the movie, because when we were doing the movie, which the movie took 4 years to do, it went through many different locations, from Randolph County Asylum to Stone Mansion to the Collingwood Arts Center, Collingwood Nunnery, to St. Albans Sanatorium, to Ashmore Estates. It went through so many different places, and so many different things happened, and my life changed. My relationship status changed. I got divorced through that movie. I'm still trying to finish it through all my, you know, my personal havoc that was going on, through the fact that there was a lot of different energy going on. You know, my ex-wife felt that she got an attachment at St. Albans, and I think that's one of the reasons that created her to become a different person. So, there's a lot of different things.
And
in that book,
you can see that in the film. And I don't know, we've never talked about this, but you just brought it up, so now I'm talking about it. When I watched the film, I kept thinking, this is like a different person than I know. She seemed like a different person.
Yeah,
that
and also,
happens,
if
right?
you notice the change in me, too, if you notice the change in me from the beginning to the end. If you watch I have more weight on me, and I don't have any tattoos. And by the end of the show, I'm a lot thinner, and I'm changed. I evolved, and I had to do that to actually. And we talked about that before, but I had to do that to save myself, because through that I went through a different. I got 7 years of terrible divorce. You know, it was just a really rough on me. But it wasn't, you know, I'm not saying I'm in a bad place now. I'm actually in a better place than I've ever been. So, you know, I don't know if I told you, but, I had heard voices all through that too. You know, there were voices that were actually trying to help me. And I heard voices like, you must change everything. You know, things like that. Look at you now, giving me encouragement that I was bettering myself. I mean, I heard voices just coming out of and it was really beautiful, but I was, you know, and anybody that gets a sign should listen to it. But, you know, Sheena, that really means a lot to me that you've noticed some kind of change in the film, because what's really great about that film, which is also, I actually just mailed you a book today, a hard copy, so
good,
you're going to get
wait.
It in the
good.
Mail. But in the book, it talks about stuff that I didn't put in the movie. And it talks about personally what happened to me and what happened through, you know, the different attachments and how overwhelming there was. You know, something that my ex-wife believed that was visiting her in the bedroom and was going to kill her. So it was getting pretty heavy. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on here, whether, you know, it's just possibly, you know, maybe... You know, imagination gone a little bit over the top or whatever it may be. Was it really happening? But I'm watching this whole thing play out in front of me, including the end of my relationship, you see. So, and, you know, you can see through the whole show the change in me and her, because we both got attacked in cell 7 in St. Albans Sanatorium by the same entity.
Yeah. And so, that will happen. People, you have to be careful. It's not, you're not messing around. You know, that it has to be careful when you're in locations like this.
Well, it was like we were just walking in and we were trying to find out what happened. And then because my ex is very sensitive and, you know, more so than, but she was like an open vessel for it. And me, I had stepped in, and then I felt like something like that movie Shudder, I swear it, it felt like something jumped on my back, like something was holding around my neck, like that movie Shudder. And I've got a video of me, like, spinning around like a chicken, you know, with his head cut off kind of vibe, like just saying, get off of me, get off of me, get off of me. And then, you know, I shook it, but I don't think that she did. So we went back and filmed it. And, you know, what we don't show in the movie is when Rebecca goes to commit suicide and hangs herself, we actually reenact that with Rachel does it too. She actually gets up on the bathtub and, you know, reenacts hanging herself. But what happened when we were shooting that, it, the vibe and the energy in the room got so bad that everybody just started crying and they couldn't deal with it. So we couldn't finish the scene. And we were actually, it was a glad, as I'm glad we told the story because it's a powerful story about a woman dealing with, you know, being abandoned in asylum and getting pregnant and then her baby being miscarried and that's the only thing she loved and still trying to deal with it. And it was just a very powerful story to tell, and I felt her story needed to be told to help create the closure. And that's, you know, where the book, that's where the movie ends and where the book starts.
Right. So the book is almost like a, it's like a behind the scenes of what happened in the movie with
it,
the
it
extra
is, and
stories.
It's sort of a transcription of the movie with all what happened while we're filming it, and then also Christina's was Archbishop Christina Rake, who is a wealth of knowledge of demons and religion, you know, and she was throughout pretty much a lot of the show. She was here when I went through my problems, and she witnessed changers, and she had to bless my entire house and the basement. She exercises the Annalise Mackell box just to cause a little bit more calmness than it might have gotten. Not necessarily it was possessed, but it had gotten a lot of hard-hitting energy on it. And, you know, just a lot of things that people don't know how serious that movie really is, you know, to us who made it, you know, 4 years of literally starting here and then just working on it, but you're changing through it. You're almost metamorphosing, but somewhat you're almost mutating into what you're working on, which, you know, not necessarily is a good thing.
Absolutely, and I think people don't realize, Christopher, that for 4 years for you and your brother, That's a long time because you guys crank out movies pretty fast.
We do, and this one, you know, as you can tell, it's quite a lot of great production value and very hot and so on. And every story pretty much is, especially the Annalise Mackell, which is a story of a you know, a saint, not a monster. And the Rebecca story is a dedication to her, not to be forgotten. And as well as the doll story of the human dolls, which is still in my house today, the Emily and Adam still in my house. And she closes her eyes by herself. A bunch of people witnessed that the other day at one of the shows. She was standing around and she started blinking at him. But it's a beautiful thing, and I'm glad I went through it. Would I go through it again? No. But I went through it, and I made it, and I became a better person, I think.
That's the best. Yeah, it's hard with the paranormal, right? Because on one hand, we have a real obligation to be who we are and do the work that is asked of us by spirit in the paranormal world, but it's you know, it's not for the faint of heart. We go through it because of it, right?
Well, I seem to be okay when I'm behind a camera filming. It's like my plastic bubble, so to speak, you know. But the minute I'm in real life and there's nothing between me and what's out there, I'm susceptible for what might happen, and I've had to learn, and I think we both, you know, since I've known you, you've always been very spiritual, but you have grown so much in your life. You can see it in your eyes and the way you talk. Your energy is, I mean, I can't wait to have lunch with you, and we'll just sit there and stare at each other and enjoy each other's light.
Yeah.
I have grown so much that it is,
yeah,
you know, the first thing that comes to my mind now is I can see the other side before I see the human side, so to speak, or whatever, this other side.
Yes.
I'm looking at the other side first. And it really helps me. It's almost like a Dalai Lama, or it's a Jesus, not saying a Jesus-like thing, but it's where you see the face of God in everything before you, you know, before you, you know, you judge, or before you throw something down. And it's helped me realize, you know, why people are doing things. It's not their fault anymore, because it's the way they conditioned, or it's, you know, why someone did that, because you know they've had a something. It's their shit. Something happened to them to make them act like that. So you can't really blame them. Not them saying that you hang around them, but you, at the same time, you aren't so judgmental as you know, where we used to be, I think, you know. And I like that a lot. I mean, incredibly a lot.
Yeah, I do too. We're meant to grow, right? Every new opportunity that Spirit puts in front of us, it's here because we're supposed to grow from it. We're supposed to grow, and we're supposed to learn, and we're supposed to get better. Every year that you're on the earth, you're supposed to be a little more together than you were the last year you were on the earth, right?
I always saw through my entire life that every year was every 2 years to me. Actually, I've noticed my life changes every 2 years. But you get closer to, not saying death, but you get closer to nirvana or to heaven. So each is like a stairway to heaven. It's another step. And you're getting, like, in the Hindu faith, you know, the ones that you listen to are the elders, or the ones with the white turbans. You go to them because they're the most oldest and the most blessed, because they've seen everything. You listen to that. So, you know, the most aged, you know, seasoned elder is who is the most wisest person. It's the same with the Native American religion as well. Here, so, you know, not so, you know, it's, you know, when you're 25, you can't even act anymore because you're too old for Hollywood, you know, that kind of thing. But in the really depth of seriousness of being seasoned as a human being, as a conscious human being, it's incredible to get older, as long as you're growing in your spirituality, because you don't have that drama anymore. You don't have that bullshit that you had when you were even 30 or 20 or whatever, because as long as you've grown spiritually, it's a beautiful thing, and you're not going to be worried when, you know, it's time to go to, you know, St. Peter's Gate, because you've got your bags packed. You're not still packing them, and you're not ready to go.
Right.
So you're in limbo, and you haunt. You're ready to go because you've already figured it out, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. I agree, and you have to be. You know, I used to always say, in the entertainment world, which is where you and I both grew up, that you kind of had to reinvent yourself every 2 years. It's kind of very much that way, I think, in your spiritual life, just in general. Like you said, every 2 years, you need to reinvent yourself, right?
You do, and I have been doing that. And you know what's really cool is that I'm proud to say is that, you know, I love myself better than I've loved myself in my entire life right now. I'm not one of those persons, oh, I wish I was younger, or I wish I was this or that. I really love who I am, and I feel that I'm the best person I've ever been through the, you know, the years I've been here on the earth. And that is really, truly where you love yourself, and you don't need anybody else, but you don't need anybody else to feel pleased. you know. It's great to have friends and companions and all that. I love that too. But you don't need them. You enter the world by yourself. You're going to leave it by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's not a, it's not meant to be, like you said, lonely or scary or make people feel
mm-mm.
bad in any way. But we come into this world
mm-mm.
alone and we leave alone, and it's because this is well and truly our journey, right? This is, it, there's nothing wrong with it being your journey. It doesn't mean that you're alone.
And you encourage others to have their own journey, and then you have a journey together. But you can't
yeah.
have a journey
that's
together
true.
If you don't have your own journey.
Right, yeah.
You know,
and
then you're living someone else's
right.
journey, you know.
Right.
So it's always, it's important to really, that's the stuff that I realize, and I'm actually also working, actually I'm in the studio right now, and I'm working on a new album. It's very beautifully haunting spiritually right now, the tracks I'm coming up with. I think I'm the only one who've actually taken Viking singing, okay, and put it into auto-tune.
It sounds amazing.
You're talking like Juice WRLD in the Viking days. It is absolutely amazing.
I can't wait to hear your – I don't think you sent me your other one yet. I can't wait to hear the one that you
did.
Oh,
well, then you know what? I'll pop it off. The other one is a very spiritual album. It's Tibetan, and it's a lot of piano and ambient tones. And they're actually using my albums in hospitals right now to help control pain, which I'm very honored. They found out that some of my fans were patients of these hospitals, these pain clinics, and they brought in and they listened to them because it helped them meditate. And so while they were in somewhat pain before the pain pills kicked in or whatever, they used it. And then the doctors heard it and they asked if they could get copies. So they use it in the pain clinics and some of the hospitals because it's very meditation and it puts your blood level low. It's called Elysium. You know, Elysium is basically the heaven for gods. It's where all the pagan gods go. So sort of a Valhalla sort of place, and
right.
that's what Elysium is. But Elysium is just escape, and that's what it is. And that album I wrote when I was going through my terrible time in life. And I needed to do that. And it was actually number 10 on Apple when it first came out, on Apple Music, on iTunes. So it did really well, but I'll send that to you. It's called Elysium, and you can stream it anywhere we're streaming. It's on everywhere from Spotify to, you know, iTunes to everywhere. It's everywhere. And then I'm going to be working on a new one. This one's more of an EDM, not ambient album, because I've recently got a lot more into the sounds of different synthesizers, but I've also matched it with Viking vocals and, you know, just feeling the energy of the paranormal and the feeling of the immortal as well as the mortal, and putting it together to creating this new sound of basically Vikings on auto-tune, which has a tone. Why they do it in the first place is when you study synthesizers, there are certain sounds that you use because I use the keys and the sounds of the chakras in it. So when you listen to a note, it's actually talking to a part of your chakra system, you know, and that is just, I guess that's where my mind is at right now after finishing this book, and then I start wrapping up my new movie, Never Blink. So, yeah.
Fantastic. I love how much you're always doing something and that you find ways to pull in the different sorts of creative gifts that you have so that sometimes you're using 1, 2, 3, 5 of them in a project. I think that's beautiful. And again, how it's intended, right? We are given gifts by spirit for a reason, to come to the earth and use them. So the fact you're using that makes me very happy.
I think that you should underline what you said. That's exactly right. Because why did I suddenly get this, or why do I suddenly am attracted to this thing, or why am I suddenly, you know, obsessed with this thing this month? Or, you know, why have I this come into my life? Because these are signs, and it's up to you whether you're going to take that sign or just blow it off. And I've actually take signs for everything I get now. And there's a reason I'm into Vikings, and I don't know why. You know, it hit me hard. And so I started adapting it now into my new music. And probably maybe I'll even be off to do some paranormal in the Viking lands. You know, who knows?
Of course.
That'd be very exciting to do.
Right. Do you know, I mean, you certainly could have Viking blood, right? I mean, you're tall and blonde, so you could, I mean,
there's probably no doubt, yeah. Yeah,
I mean
Booth means,
Booth means
hut, yeah, it means hut in Anglo-Saxon. And so Anglo-Saxons are the British Vikings, so there you go. And so Romans and my mom and dad are buried at Hadrian's Wall, which is where, you know, was a wall that was built to keep the Romans and then the Anglo-Saxons out from the Scots coming into England. And they have a beautiful view of the Yorkshire Moors and that wall that's still standing today that's never fallen.
Right.
So it's absolutely incredible.
Right. And I'm dark, right? I'm Black Irish, so I probably have some Roman or some Spanish, or God only knows who. Everybody conquered the area, right? We're all kind of a mishmash of everyone who came and conquered there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a free fall, and then, you know, the Valkyrie territorials going up, but it's an incredible history. I started, you know, when I started collecting the emblems and the necklaces and started seeing the history behind the Catholic Vikings and realized that, well, you know, the new Viking show is coming out next year on Netflix, and it's about, you know, King Edward is a Viking now in of England. The King of England is a Viking.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny because I have a store that sells Viking stuff, and it's called St. Valhalla, and their show's called Valhalla, coming out next year. So, you know, if you guys anyway need some Viking stuff, that's what's going to happen next year. But, you know, I love this. I've got a lot of tattoos that are Viking runes, binding runes, which are beautiful, just all kind of different kind of symbols, the Hell of Oz and the, you know, the map of Odin and, you know, Asgard and just all kinds of cool stuff. Very fascinating stuff.
That's awesome. So interesting. What makes us, right? You are wonderful, my friend. Where can people find the book? And can you talk a little bit about the new film, as little as you can? I know it's hard when it's not out yet to talk about it.
Sure. Well, the book you can find, it's on Amazon now. Amazon is now carrying it. And you can also get it at SpookTV, SpookTV.com. If you get it from there, you actually get a free gift with it, and it's autographed. It's right there for a little bit. But it's also on Amazon. It's called My Haunted Attachment. And you can find everything about me on my Facebook. And then the new movie, Never Blink, which we're wrapping up, it'll be coming out next year, is basically about, have you ever wondered what you're missing when you blink? And you blink literally 0.3 seconds when you blink. And if you add that up, you blink. You actually go into the darkness 48 minutes in a day, every single day, 48 minutes you're missing in the blackness. Your mind fills in a gap of the previous image that you've seen, so you don't think you're in the darkness. But if that image was taken away and you actually saw what you're missing, you wouldn't be able to deal with it. And that's what we're going to show you in Never Blink.
Wow. That's really cool.
And it's true. That's all true science, too. That's real science. If you actually blink that, and that's, you know, if you know, obviously in the paranormal, the ghost can be entering when you blink. The paradigm world is operating on a blink. The vortexes create on a frame of a blink, which is a 0.3 seconds. It's an aperture of a camera where you can capture your vortex. All science agrees. It's, I think it's 450, was it 80,000 times you blink in a certain year or whatever it is. I don't have the specs in front of me, but the film is based on the specs, and then we also, at that point, we create a vortex world that you see. And when you blink, and the only way able to stay in that is that you must be rapidly blinking as if you're having a seizure to stay in that world.
Wow.
So you actually able to fight. I mean, how can you fight something you can't even see unless you blink?
Yeah.
So this thing is only there when you blink. So you can imagine what fun we're having with this film. So I'm also writing the score right now. While Phil's editing it, I'm writing the score on that one, which is totally an electronic score with the most grittiest, fattest synthesizers mixed with ambient, earthy tones. So it's like a fight between reality and the blink world. So it's a very scary movie. And it's our job to make sure that you're never going to be able to blink again. In our movie, we have people that are making sure they can't blink by they tape their eyes open, they super glue their eyes open, they staple gun their eyes open, anything not to blink.
Wow. Wow.
So,
that's awesome.
It's heavy.
Fantastic. I will hide my stapler before I see it.
I'll send you a poster. And you'll see what I mean. I got some promo posters that arrived. I'll send that one off with the Elysian app. It'll be Christmas for you when you get the package.
Oh, thank you, my friend. And thank you for the rosary you sent me. I collect rosaries, so it is cherished, and I love it.
Did you feel the energy on that?
Oh, God, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, the energy is powerful.
I have a little bowl in front of my Ganesh. I'm very into Ganesh. The remover of obstacles,
yes.
And I have one on my stand, and I have a little bowl in front of it. It's actually a bowl made from a coconut, and it has a mother of pearl and abalone inlay. And my mom loved mother of pearl, abalone, and coconuts, interestingly enough. Somebody gave me that, not knowing any of those things. And so I have a little mesh bag that has her ashes in it, and I put the rosary in there with it.
Oh, God bless.
So it's a very sacred
place
for you right now.
They're very powerful rosaries. They all belong to nuns that were in a nunnery for over 95 years from Rochester, New York. And when the nunnery was pulled down, they found these rosaries hidden in the wall, because when the sisters would pass, they would put their belongings into the walls. So when they originally started pulling it down and renovated it into an old folks home, the wall came coming down, and then the nuns needed to relocate, so we were able to donate money to the nuns, and in exchange they gave us the rosaries, and then in exchange I gave them out with our books.
I love that. That is so wonderful.
I,
you are fantastic, my friend. One more time, tell my people where they can find you.
Christopher St. Booth. You Google me, you'll find me everywhere. We're on Sci-Fi Channel, we're on Amazon Prime, we're on SpookTV.com, we're on everywhere, we're everywhere. And we're going to be even more aware next year. And thank you so much for having me. And let me know what you think of the book. The book is pretty intense, very intense.
It's going to be a Christmas read. I appreciate that. Everybody, the wonderful Christopher St. Booth, what a joy to have you here, my friend, and always such an addition to the show. If you missed any of those links, I'm Sheena Metal at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. You can find me everywhere at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com for all of your psychic and paranormal and entertainment needs. That's where I am. We're here every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time, LiveParanormal.com and HauntedPlayground.com. And don't forget to check out my Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Raising the Vibration is the show. Until I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration. And you know what? I'll see you next time. I love you all. Take care. Stay spooky.